Hey, you all are the conference true believers because you are at the last session time at the conference. And I always have special affinity of people who are in it to win it. That is you. So you are going to need to access this QR code for some stuff. We got like a digital goodie bag for you of all of the wonderful things that this district has done relative to standards-based grading. So give yourself a moment to grab this URL because there's some key links to stuff that's in this deck. And I give you a minute to grab that QR code before we move on. Yeah. Like, there's a point now. You got two talkers here. Okay, she can talk, I can talk. So we're gonna play fast and loose with our agenda here. There is a point in which we do get to that time, and it's okay if we don't. We want to have you look at some artifacts online because we got like a collection of stuff, and so that there would be a certain point in the deck that you would need to access during the session. Okay. But we'll see. Colleen's got amazing stories about the journey.
Yes.
And I'm gonna just let my girl cook, okay? I'm gonna just let her cook. I'm just here to kind of introduce, kind of set the scene, but again, it's Profiles in Courage, and I stand in the midst of courageous leadership here. So we're gonna give Avondale the props for the good work they do. And let's get this party started. That is, if the clicker works, which, at present, it does not. Is it on? Is the classic question, right? Ooh, it's sticky. It was not on. A genius in our midst. So welcome to Profiles in Courage, Implementing Standards-Based Grading. I am but one of your hosts and facilitators here today, Dr. Steven Sneed, and this is my fantabulous colleague from Avondale Schools, the Assistant Superintendent of Teaching and Learning.
Curriculum instruction,
same thing, right? Assistant Superintendent of all that and a bag of chips at Avondale, Colleen. So we're gonna get through some welcome and introductions here in a bit. We'd like to meet all of you, smaller crowd, so we can have lots of time to really get to know one another. We're gonna take a little bit to anchor ourselves in, like, why are we here to do this? Like, what's the point of standards grading? We're gonna do a bit of an artifact analysis, but Colleen's gonna launch you into that. We're kind of explaining their journey of how they got along this road, and then we'll just, we might get to a reflection conversation, we might not. Depends upon the richness and the depths of your conversation, and we're out of here. So Colleen, I'll let you introduce yourself.
Well, welcome, everybody. Thank you for being here. I work for a smaller district in Oakland County. It's considered small in Oakland, but if you are in other parts of the state, it might not be. We have about 3,600 kids. We have one high school, four regular elementaries, a regular middle school that's about 600 kids, and then we also have a gifted magnet school that's second through eighth grade. So one of the things that that is really interesting about Avondale is we have the demographic diversity of a large city school. We are located just right next to Stellantis, formerly Chrysler, and we have students that come from all over the world, also in our backyards. We speak over 40 languages, and we have students that range the whole gamut of social socioeconomic status. So I always like to say that Avondale is a very small world, and just like it's a small world after all, we've got all the things there at Avondale in a very small, or it's kind of long, but narrow little district as far as you know, square footage. So anyway, it's a great place to implement change because it's a good size for that. So we're big enough that we can offer a lot of programming and a lot of coursework at our high school, but we're still small enough where we can make changes quicker than maybe some of our neighbors that have 25 buildings, where we're a bit smaller than that. So that is, I've obviously got some history here that you can see. Yes, I am an Ohio State grad, and we still get along. We work through that. My husband likes to say I'm an OU grad because he's a Michigan fan, so he always says the O for me is from Oakland University. When I first started out, I started out as a teacher in Columbus, Ohio. Then I moved here, and I was mainly a middle school math teacher, and then I became a middle school counselor, and then a curriculum director, and now I'm over at Avondale as an assistant superintendent, and I love my job.
And she's good at her job, right? That seems to be a thing. Being good at your job these days is important. I'm Dr. Stephen Seed, Supervisor of Curriculum and Assessment at Oakland Schools, and on the Board of Directors for the Michigan Assessment Consortium, and on the Executive Committee putting on this conference. So hopefully you have had a good conference experience thus far this year. I cut my teeth in the biz as a high school English teacher in Detroit, transitioned to a similar role in Oak Park, then become a data specialist as a result of grants and school improvement programs. And then I make my way to Oakland Schools as a partner with my former colleague, Jonathan Flukes, and now I'm supervisor of a unit. I'm a proud product of the Detroit Public Schools, graduated from Cass Tech. You put your hand up. Where'd you go?
Southeastern.
Okay. With McGatlin or pre-Gatlin? Pre-Gatlin. We go way back. All right. But hey, shout out. Okay, all right. Who was there at that time? You remember? Yeah. Okay. We not old though. We not old. They old. We not old. Okay. So proud product of Detroit Public Schools. Went to school here, the University of Michigan. Grad work at Wayne State and doctoral work at Missouri, or the Mizzou as we call it. So we want to know who you are. I'm going to give. Well, we don't need an index card for this because we're small and mighty. And I think we can just do everybody one at a time. So I like to give people like wait time. So we're going to pause for 60 seconds, get your story straight in your head, your name, title, district, and what brought you here and like brought you here to this session. Okay. Think about that. And then I'll just kind of go around the room.
Crystal Walters, I am a district learning assessment coach and special education But we've already implemented it at the elementary level with positive momentum. And so we're looking at transitioning our secondary middle school eventually to a post-secondary program, to standards-based grading. And it really put up, one, I'm just curious to learn more about how that could possibly look at other people's experiences. And two, to open up this round, the round peg square hole situation. And in special education, we've been trying for years to find other ways to really reflect what our students can do and what they know, aside from an antiquated system, and really have an accurate reflection of what their skills are when they need them. So when you need KPS, you can have obviously graduate with a missionary control, but you can also graduate with a certificate of completion. And so I'm also working with a small work group of building tiers of what that certificate of completion look like. And it's a lot easier it could potentially be a lot easier if we use standard-based grading so I can accurately reflect what they really do. Because with accommodations, yes, the student got an A, but what can they actually do in the prison? And so it's listening. So that's why I'm doing that.
Good work.
My name is Dan Cohen. I'm an instructional coach. I'm in the West District. I'm a teacher. I'm a teacher.
You got a lot on your plate.
Yes,
What district again? I'm sorry, I missed. Jackson Public. Okay, all right. Well, hey, everybody, welcome. We're going to meet some new friends, or you made some new friends. So let's get into that wired standards-based grading. I gave everybody an index card. So, and I'm gonna tell some of Colleen's business everybody. She has not been in New York City. And I'm like, you haven't been to New York City? Like, how is that possible? So if you've ever been to New York City, tall buildings, you get on the elevator, you got a good 30 seconds on the elevator, depending on how high you're going, right? You're standing next to, we said Ballmer, right? Steve Ballmer, right? Big pockets, right? And you're like, ooh, here's your chance. Blank check for standards-based grading. Or could be your new superintendent, who's a very traditional grader. You're getting on the elevator with him or her. Or for those of you who are unionized, you get on the elevator with your union president, who's like, standards-based grading. You got 30 seconds. What's the elevator pitch? What's the elevator pitch? And you're going to write that on the index card. So as a model example, this is the elevator pitch for Uber. So I think, no shade, judging from the crowd, we are all of a certain age. We remember taxi cabs, right? So there was such a thing. If you've ever been to New York, pre-rideshare, you know, you're doing one of these and they're driving by. A very haggling experience. Rideshare solves all of that. You push a button and a black car comes to pick you up. You don't have to carry cash. You don't have to stand on street corner. And you know exactly when it's arriving. Shut up and take my money. And as a result, the rideshare has significantly disrupted the taxi cab environment to the level that it's a far diminished market than what it once was, because ultimately the solution solved a problem that people were experiencing. And so that's the key about your elevator pitch, is helping to really distill in the simplest non-jargony way possible, what's the benefit, what's the sell? Why should I invest my time in this as a teacher? Why should I fund this if I'm Steve Ballmer? Why should I get behind this if I'm your union president? If I'm an employee, well, why should I do this and I can go to the other district that's not doing any of this standards-based stuff? Really, really be creative. If you would like to use the AI tool of your choice, feel free. But we're going to give you a solid like 5 minutes to just brainstorm what's your elevator pitch for standards-based grading, and then we'll check in with each other. All right? 5 minutes. I'm going to come around with the mic for the sake of the one or two people that might be listening to this recording. If you're listening to this recording, we're grateful that you did. I'm going to come around, and we just like to hear some of your elevator pitches. So I'm just going to physically, Christy, where are you going? I'm walking over here, and then you left me. I'm so hurt. All right, I'm just going to collocate over here. Does anybody want to share there? Well, I'm Christy, and she can walk away, but I'm walking because she's so good. She really is good.
So everyone, students, teachers, administrators, and parents need to know what students are learning and how they're coming with that learning. It allows for targeted instructional and learning decisions and an opportunity for teachers to meet students where they are.
Look, everything my girl Chrissy does is good, okay? I'm going to let you know. And you got a blue dot, right? She's making a difference, all right? I'm going to locate around here.
Yeah, there were. So one of the things I said, because I went last, is I was like, oh, it makes me feel good because there's a lot of common themes in what we said. But what I said was, clear is kind. Standards-based grading helps all to better understand what students actually know and what they have yet to learn, and helps to take the guesswork and bias out of antiquated grading practices.
Antiquated, all right. You threw down the gauntlet, right? I was like, all right.
That's what you're talking about, okay.
We need grades to reflect learning, not just completion. For credit recovery, it helps us target skill gaps, measure real progress, and make sure a diploma represents proficiency, not just time served. A traditional grade tells what a student earned. Standard-based grading tells what a student learned.
Isn't that good?
Okay. If I'm Steve Ballmer, I am like emptying out my pockets for all of these things. And I say that tongue in cheek, but I did literally have, you know, a board member once kind of pull me to the side and say, like, hey, like, if you want people to get behind and fund the thing, you've got to be able to distill to them what is the benefit, because they're accountable to the public. So they got to explain to the public, in terms of public can get behind, well, what progress is the district making? And so sometimes we can be a little too jargony in the headspace. And the key thing about our communities is they have an understanding of what school is in their head. And it probably goes a little something like this. I send my baby to school. They do work. They turn it in, and they get a grade. The grade they probably want their kid to have is anywhere between an A to a D. Because I've had some parents community that we had to work on our expectations for students. Well, I'm okay if they just pass. And then I got some, if they got an A minus, ooh, I know I'm getting a phone call. And everything in between. So when you come talking about standard, what the? So distilling into that simple thing is important. All right, so now we're going to get in Avondale. Like, what has Avondale done to, like, start this journey? So Colleen is going to kind of take you through that before we look at some specific artifacts.
Now that paper should work on this guy, right? Okay. So, first of all, I'm going to say this journey was not super smooth. Just like some of you have shared that you're either dabbling in it or you've gone to this throughout the district, or there may be levels where you've done this and you're trying to either grow it or begin it. And I can tell you that it's, you know, it's not easy, but it is probably, if I have to put my finger on the most impactful thing that we could do that impacted so many aspects of just the school day, our approach to instruction, behavior, all of that, this had the most impact in the work that we've done at Avondale. So it started with our strategic plan. So in 2020, 2021, so pandemic times, we were building the 2025 strategic plan. So we had several things that you can see here, our strategic advancements for the specific year 21-22. At the top, you can see things that in that gray bar, honor the work of the strategic plan of 2020, streamline activities, because we had 152 activities in the 2020 strategic plan, which was unmanageable. Incorporate implicit bias training and update everything for relevance. So as we started going through the implicit bias training, we started recognizing that we had some issues with equity. Earlier, I talked about our district, the diversity there. We all have diversity in our schools, and this was an equitable approach. We also had some problems to solve. So often, and you guys have identified several of these problems, there's bias in grading, definitely. Standards-based grading, the research says that we can mitigate some of that. But there were bigger problems that Avondale had. We were trying to switch to project-based and more problem-based, that 3P approach to learning right before the pandemic hit. It was starting to roll out, and it was rolling out at all levels. And what we found was that we were trying to change practice in the classroom, but our report cards did not match what we were trying to do in the classroom. So formative assessment was not reflected in any of the reporting. It wasn't part of the framework for what we were doing, because we'd look at these report cards for elementary, and they were aligned to resources and some basic skills. they were not aligned to standards. Teachers at the elementary didn't know their standards. They knew their resources, and they were just trying to manage through that. So we did a little bit of discovery there. At the middle school, behaviors were being graded more often than academics. So I was a middle school teacher. I understand the function of middle school, that yes, they are learning some really big things, but they're also learning some behaviors that are things that we need them to get ready for high school, right? So the middle school was really focused on, are you turning things in on time? Are you completing your work? And it was muddying up the grades. So we were getting kids with really good grades, but then their MSTEP scores didn't match. Their NWEA didn't match. So there was some calibration issues there. At the high school level, our high school principal was doing a lot of visioning work, trying to get our content areas to unsilo and to work together so that it would reflect our portrait of a graduate, which we don't want people working in silos. We want them to be able to understand how all of these content areas connect. So he reorganized all the PLCs, and none of them were in their siloed off content areas. So they were cross-content PLCs. So the problem there was, how do we look at our student performance when I'm teaching biology, but you're teaching art? An art class, ceramics. So we had some problems to solve there. And the way that we approached it was to start with standardizing our practices. So we did not start by saying we're going to go to standards-based grading. We launched a full year investigation on what we might want to do as a district. So here was our timeline for this year. Our idea was that we would look at equitable grading practices and we would start to research for a vision. We were hoping that by December, we would have some evidence-based practices in grading. That in January through April, we would start with some report card committees. And then by April 28th, which was an early release day, that we would have, we would evaluate and we would reflect on what we've done, and then some common practices and reporting mechanisms by the end of the year. This was the goal. We didn't reach all these goals. We spent a lot of time on vision, and what we found was that we needed to spend more time on vision. So I'm gonna show you where we kind of got started was just really talking about the why behind this. So I explained all of the problems, but there are other reasons why we need to do this work, and those are listed right here. You have grading practice. Where are we now? And this was one of the reflective slides that every PLC received, and then they had notes, and then we took in all of those notes as a curriculum team, and then the next time they met, they got to see what those results were. So the goal was equitable and consistent grading practices that make sense to students and their families. So again, still not saying we're going to standards-based grading because we were exploring what are the different methods to do this. I'm gonna let you guys watch this on your own because we've only got about a half an hour left. But this is actually a clip from the movie, what is the Brad Pitt movie about baseball? Shoot. Moneyball. Yes. So it's a good clip, and they had to connect it. Here was the model for change that we were going to use and that we did end up using. So I wasn't trained in NERN. If you are a fan of NERN, I wish we would have had that training prior to this, but we have been implementing it since training, and it has helped us. But we use this model for change. So vision and consensus is where we were going for this first year, and we spent the whole first year on vision and consensus. Our PLCs had to dive into research. And this is what they used, this model. And I don't know if you've ever seen this approach, but I would use it. We're using it again with our math leadership team as we're shopping for resources to support our math programs. We just did this again. So back in 21, 22, we use this model, and it's still relevant for our math team this year. Culture, what will our stakeholders value or believe? Conditions, what resources and structures will be in place? And competencies, what will we, teachers, coaches, principals, be able to do well? So when we were looking at a vision, what are you thinking, you know, as we go through this? They put it on sticky notes, and then we collected all of that. Again, if you are starting to do this work, if you have not done visioning work, you need to back up. Because we have had to, just last year, we had to reference our vision again. And as we made some adjustments, especially at the high school level, it has been something that has anchored all of the work that we've done. I'm going to stop there. Does anybody have any questions or anything that resonates with you? Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. You just mentioned that you had to be glad you did the big work to go back to weapons.
Yes.
How do you? You have a lot of turnover.
Yes. Yes.
Go back and reference a vision that the new principal and teacher weapons didn't have a part in making the buying.
Right, right. So as we have implemented other school improvement efforts, we go back to our grading vision and we also look at that. So we did a vision with how we're going to approach reading. We just did one for math. Every time we do that, we bring in the other pieces, other areas where we've done this visioning work and make sure that they all align. So you're always working on school improvement. If you need to make an adjustment to your vision, it's always good to go back to it. Each year, we go back to our vision and we ask if this is still relevant. Do we need to make changes? We do it at a school building level. I do it also with our ad council, which is mostly our administrators, our building administrators, but also program leads like maybe our athletic director and some of our MTSS coordinators. And we always just check to make sure that it's still relevant. So it's a great question. So here was the vision. The Avondale School District will implement reporting practices that clearly communicate student growth and mastery. Student learning will be supported through consistent and clear expectations. Grading will be inclusive of self-evaluation, time for reflection, academic responsibility, and opportunity to advance understanding and mastery. We added in also this little short paragraph about collective efficacy, knowing that it's super important that we all agree that we make an impact on learning every day. And as we take steps in this direction, we need to collectively work towards the same goal, because you know how it can go. You've got the people who aren't on board who want to, you know, get in there and maybe upset the apple cart. So it was super important that we kept referring back to this. We can all do this. We can do hard things and we can do them even better together. So I asked this question yesterday. This vision is still live. We still have to refer back to it. Our teachers who have been doing this a while, very effective teachers, what do you think they are still struggling with? There's one very specific thing, and there's no wrong answers, but there is one thing that I can highlight that they are really still struggling with. What do you think it might be? Yes, ma'am. So as we develop rubrics, and I did not mention this yesterday, but as we develop rubrics, our teachers are really great at that, but it's the student-facing side of it. So, and one of the things that we have started to recognize is that these rubrics have language in them that the students don't necessarily understand. And it's typically not that content area specific vocabulary, but we just ran some of our high school rubrics through the AI wonderful magic machine and asked it to pull out all the tier 2 vocabulary, and the list was long. So we forget sometimes that students don't always utilize this language. They may not know the language, and it's super important that we teach through the rubrics. So some of the problem that we have found with self-evaluation with the students is that they don't understand the language of the rubric, and it's not usually the words that you think it's going to be, the words that you teach because it's part of your content. It's these little side words that they just don't hear in everyday language that are throwing them off. So we are focused on that now, and we're working through that right now. Any questions about our vision? This was not really rolled out and really solidified until we started year two. So we worked on this throughout the whole first year. Also, we worked on consensus. And after doing all of the research, what we found when we started the following year is that through all of the research, the thing that kept bubbling to the top that these teachers were taking notes on happened to be standards-based grading. So remember, we are looking at standardizing and looking for equitable practices. One of my favorite things that happened is one of my cynical middle school teachers raised his hand and said, "Why don't you just tell us we're going to standards-based grading?" And my response was, "Is that what the research is telling you?" And he said, "Yes, why don't we just do it?" And that was my cue that even this person who was usually pretty kind of a stinker was ready to move on. We're ready to start doing some work. So at that point, we said, "Hey, all of your notes, everything is pointing this direction. So this is the direction we're going to go because it fits with our vision." So when you look at our vision, you guys built the vision, and then here is the grading model that matches the vision most closely. So here was our timeline for year two, really working on common practices, still working on common reporting mechanisms. Elementary report cards were rebuilt through a committee. We started with them. We built our, here's a good example, our math standards. We said, well, what is tested? What are we held accountable for? We looked at the strands of the M-STEP. And so here is an example, I don't have it up here, but fourth grade, the first standard that they report on in mathematics is solves problems using all four operations. In the past, they would have wanted to bust that out into the four operations and report on all of those. That makes our report cards almost unmanageable when you do that for every one of them. So we had to teach the elementary teachers that means your student does not get a proficient score unless it's all four. And that was really hard for them to take. Well, this kid tries so hard and they're just working on division. They are not proficient unless they have the division also. And then where do you put that? In the comments. So our report cards have four. We had tight and loose requirements. 4 to 6 standards, that's it. On a 4-point scale, that's it. In the comments, you have your professional freedom. Now, principals check those. But you can then say, working on division. Has all three secure, but still working on division. So that's how we managed elementary. There's some balance with some knowledge standards with social studies. And then with science, we used 4 of the science practices that also impact math, social studies, and ELA. So we used only 4 of the math practices, and they're the same 4 all the way through. We use FOSS Science, which is a pretty robust resource, and we've had to bring in some of their trainers to show how to use some literacy in science to make sure that you are collecting data, kids are analyzing it, they're questioning, they're doing all of those things so that we can record it, because they're not doing right or wrong questions anymore. If they are, they're not living through our vision. They're not living through the practices that we have been working so hard on. So professional learning was really important. We had to keep working on data collection and formative assessment. One of the beautiful things about working on rubrics, and especially as you're working with students, is that you're constantly doing formative assessment, because you're looking at, where am I at on this rubric? What's the criteria for moving up? What am I missing in my understanding? And teachers have now had to start conferencing with students, and you can't hide in the back and just take a zero anymore. You cannot do that in our district. So that that actually now triggers an inquiry into if a kid is doing that avoidance behavior. Now in our district, starting this year, we started to test them for reading issues. This is part of PA 146. So if you're familiar, and that's part of your job and your learning this year, know that now, if kids are not participating in the work that we do in the classroom, we look at it as avoidance behavior, and it triggers a screener, and we're screening kids now. So when I said at the beginning of this that changing our grading practices and the way that we do things has impacted so many things, this is one of the things. The other thing that it's done is our behavior has gone way down. Any kind of behaviors that we had in classrooms, our teachers really know their kids now, because you can't hide. You can't hide in the back of the classroom. You can't take your zeros. You have to sit there with the teacher and actually work through this rubric and the expectations. So that is where a lot of our professional learning was coming from. I will tell you that our last level to jump on board with standards-based grading was middle school. Middle school was the hardest because we had turnover at the leadership. So I've been at Avondale 7 years. We are on our third principal. She's been there a little while now, and we're pretty solid now. But for the first couple of years, we went through some people. So it took a little bit of time for them to get there. One of the coolest things that happened at that middle school, though, is that the social studies department did an experiment. So in this year, they said, we're going to do two categories. We're going to give a behavior category. They turn their work in on time. They participate. We're going to give that a score, and then we're going to give the academics a score. Do they understand the content? Are they able to apply it? Whatever the social studies standards were. And what they found was, it was 50-50. Kids were getting the same grade, but this kid had really high scores in trying hard, didn't do so well in academics. This kid did really well in academics, didn't turn things in on time, still getting the same grade, and how is that clarity for the parents? So when we ended up creating our grading mechanisms, the elementary, we took away all letter grades. Elementary's letter grades went away. We gave letter grades in fourth and fifth grade. Problematic, because what was happening is, in math, I've got all ones and twos, which are lower scores, but I gave the kid an A or a B because they try really hard. And then they get to middle school, and their parents are like, I don't understand. They always did so well in math, and it's because these two things did not correlate. So we just took the letter grades away, and we really didn't have any pushback from elementary. So taking the letter grades away was not an issue. Middle school determined that they were going to also do what elementary did, which is give grades for skills for successful learners. And that would be represented on a report card with a 4-3-2-1. And then academics would be another score. The beauty of middle school is you do not have to give an overall course grade. You can give them two grades. So because that social studies group did that experiment, they were able to just let that live through. So at elementary, you get a whole bunch of ones and twos and whatever on all of those standards. At middle school, for each course, they get one for the skills for successful learners, an overall, and one for their academics, which is an overall. But when they bust it out on the computer, you can see all of the standards and how all those grades play into it. So there's still that transparency. This was the goal, was that we would get those first report cards out. Because of the turnover at the middle school, we struggled with that there. High school was a little further ahead than middle school. They had been doing visioning work for a very long time. They had been developing rubrics for a very long time, some departments more than others. And they were able to start using the 4-point scale. So around this time, we started getting everybody used to the 4-point scale. And And that started to help our community understand we're running things a little bit more like proficiency scales, which if they took M-STEP, they understood proficiency scales. Then we realized that moving in to our last year, that the year before last, that we didn't have a system that was set up really well for standards-based grading, that we were trying to do square peg, round hole. So we switched over to PowerSchool. So this was a whole thing that we had to do too, is to build a structure. So again, the NERN helped with this, where we recognized one of our implementation drivers what and a barrier was that our information system wasn't as intuitive as we needed it to be. So we had a timeline where we had to switch our tools. So visioning, super important, practices in the classroom, super important, and then tools for communication, hugely important. So this is what it looks like in PowerSchool. This is a standard. This is another, and another, and another, and another. These are actually our skills for successful learners at the middle school. Notice that there's nothing in the traditional points. So if I'm looking at a student, this student got a 3 in timeliness and a 4 in preparedness and participation, a 2. And then cooperation, a 4, and attendance is a 4. So this is, so each, just like an elementary report card, they're able to see those scores, and it's easy to see in the system. Yes, sir.
So two questions. One, for an example like this where it's like learner behavior, mm-hmm. grading, I'm assuming that the teachers are working collaboratively. I'm thinking ahead of like a coaching team special situation.
Yep.
They're working collaboratively to mm-hmm. decide what answer to get.
Yes. So not only with that, they also, several of our teachers, and it's now getting spread school-wide, they actually have kids that score themselves and then set goals, and then they turn that in. And then at the end of the week, the teacher circles where they think they are, and then they proceed to set their goal for the next week based on the feedback from the teacher. So the student gets some say into where they believe they are, too. When we look at, I taught eighth graders algebra, so that's a high school class for high school credit. When we look at if this was academics, they would have 4 standards, and it does average out to a grade because we do have to look at that whether you know. But we don't look at this when it comes to transcripts. This is just information for the parents. So with middle school, when we're looking to make decisions about credit or things like that, we're only looking at the academic one. This was just an easy page to pull out of one of my informational slides that gives teachers directions on how to do things. Okay, so I do want to point out that I'm gonna go back to the vision. I'm going to tell you a little story about what happened. So it's weird how people get really stuck on a 100-point scale. So we tried to do the thing where you mitigate for the 0 and you give the 50%. We tried to do that. Then teachers flipped out, especially middle school teachers. How do you know if a kid got a 50 or got a 0? And we said, okay, so here's one of the problems. You go to a 4-point scale, you can still give a 0. For us, it just means lack of evidence. So we give zeros and it means lack of evidence. But it doesn't impact like a 100-point scale. What's interesting is that you take away that 100-point scale, and even though we all grew up with a 4-point scale for GPAs, and when you move to high school, they look at that 4-point scale all the time, and you say, okay, so we take a 100-point scale, and then we convert it into a letter grade, and then we convert it into a 4-point scale. So it's this scale, then this scale, then this scale. We introduced a 4-point scale for our rubrics at the high school. What we didn't realize, and what we should have been more probably in tune with, was we tried to be very true to standards-based grading and proficiency, where the twos, the threes, the fours did not equate to the four-point GPA scale. The problem that happened was first semester scores came out. Parents had been watching. My kid's getting twos, getting twos, getting twos. Why did they get a D when we cross? Because we have to crosswalk to letter grades. Well, our board wanted to make sure that if we did this just at high school, and so that our transcripts are understandable. So then they got a D, and it didn't make sense to parents. So this is where the vision came back in. We did have to compromise, and the high school did have to adjust their rubrics. And this is probably one of the reasons why it's so hard to do at the high school, because you are now you're working in GPA land. And we have a lot of English learners. If we've got a four-point scale that means something here, then we convert it to letter grades, and then there's a four-point scale that means something different. There, we got a lot of feedback that this is not clearly communicating. This is confusing for parents. So yes, my teachers had to go back to work. Yes, they had to shift what their language was in their rubric. And we did have to shift to where it was an easier crosswalk. So if I'm seeing my kid get twos in their standards, then I can see that that's going to be around a 2.0 or a 2.3 or whatever it might be, so that it makes a lot more sense to our parents. And we just had our first marking period late January, and I didn't have any complaints this year. Last year was a mess. It was a big mess. So this work is hard work, but sometimes going back to your vision, going back to, yes, you might have to compromise a little bit. I know that our rubrics were on a proficiency scale, but now the very first thing we said is it's clear communication. So if you're doing something that's super confusing and your stakeholders come and tell you that it's super confusing, you got to listen. And sometimes you're able to work around, but in this case, it was more teacher work, but it's benefited us to not have to make those different scales work. So anyway, again, the vision is so important, and the consensus around things are so important. What does the research say? You need like 80% of people to be on board? I don't know. A majority. So anyway, I would love to entertain any questions that you have. I know that we're going to go. I don't know what time it is. Oh, geez. Okay. So I know that we are going to go on an artifact hunt, but I don't know if we'll be able to. Yes, extended. And I also have my card here if you have any questions and you want any kind of artifacts. I will share anything with you. The more people who do this, the more school districts who do this, the less we have to constantly defend why we do it. So I thank you for being here and being interested. Yes, sir, did you have a question? Just for middle school. We don't do that for high school. It's actually embedded, though some of those behaviors might be, those expectations, I should say, could be possibly embedded in some of the rubrics, but it's more holistic at the high school. So we go from lots of scores in elementary to two scores in middle school to one score in high school for each. We have a two-week period where we do a cumulative assessment that could be project-based, that could be problem-based, it could be a performance task. That most of our exams look like a performance task. We do that because we also want to make sure that our kids are that have missed school have enough data points, because they have to have at least five data points per standard. So if you have five standards, we need to see at least 25 scores for that course. And we want the most recent. So teachers can go in and they can identify formative assessment and summative assessment. Some teachers just use evidence, and then they exempt earlier or outdated data. So our system allows us to do that. and they can do it that way. Mm-hmm. They're not. We pretty much formative is not scored at all. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. 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 Formative is it's what we're doing while we're learning. It is, yeah. So we don't score it at all. And at any time a teacher sees evidence of learning and they want to put it in their grade book under a standard, they can. It could be an observation that they see in the classroom and they can put it in there. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. We also do not assign work out of school. Typically, that is not a thing. That wasn't a thing before AI, but now I can always say to people who don't understand, why don't you assign homework? I can tell them because AI can do all of that, just like parents used to be able to do all of it for a kid. We assess in real time. We assess in real time while kids are in front of us, which is why there's not quite as much scoring. There's not as much grading. So the selling point is, yes, you have to change your practices as a teacher, but you will be doing less scoring and less paperwork. That is the goal, because this is more of the student owning their learning than you putting marks on a paper. Oh, I love this question. Yes. Yes. So last year, when we were going through this, we had a whole lot of complaints about that. You're not prepping them for college, because the real world doesn't give you scores on paper, but college may. So I brought in a panel of college admissions people, and we did a Zoom. And I had six representatives from private colleges like Lawrence Tech, Michigan State were fantastic. I had all kinds of people up on, and we did live in person and Zoom. And we advertised that we were doing this. We collected questions from the community. I stood at the podium and I read through the questions and they answered the questions. I gave them a heads up ahead of time which questions I'd be asking, that we would be asking about this. They were amazing, and then I did it again this fall. It is, people's misconceptions are crazy. Jody, who is the admissions for U of M, he basically said, hey, we don't even look at your GPAs. We take your grades. We get rid of all the pluses and minuses. We dump all your electives, depending on what college you're applying to. We recalculate that. We look at how you took advantage of your atmosphere, like how many AP classes were offered and how many did you take. Not how you did according to your neighbors. It went through all of that and explained. We get report cards from 3,000 different entities and they all look different. So we have to redo everything. The other thing that we had them do is every single one of them, I said, how do our transcripts look? And they said they look like pretty much everybody else's. So debunking those, you're not getting them ready for college. This year, Ben, who's from Michigan State, he came with his homework knowing that he was helping us to defend our practices. And he looked at the data from students from Avondale and said 100% of our students that came to them last year were in good academic standing still. And that is very hard to find. So those stats, those testimonials from college admissions people are huge. So that was a necessity last spring after the mess with the report card and the 4-point scale. It was a luxury this fall that they came back. College admissions people really like, they all said that they loved learning about how each other does things because they all do it differently. And that's the thing. The real world is accepting things from everywhere, and they do their own thing. So thinking that your one size fits all and there's only one way to do things is, it doesn't work. One other thing is that he even gets narrative report cards from a school in New York, and those are some of his best students. So some of the most competitive students at U of M come from a school that doesn't give any grades at all. It's just narrative. So it was really helpful to bring in the prophet from another land. And because, you know, they don't want to hear it sometimes from you. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. So we saw there's always an implementation dip, and we've been looking for it. We haven't really seen it. Our growth is really high, especially in some elementary areas. I think a lot of that is because of how we've attacked reading. So at the same time as we were doing this, we were making major shifts in reading. At the high school level, just last year, we were in the top 5 for growth in science. So our science, Stephen probably knows my data better than I do, but our science has bumped up quite a bit. Our students, our SAT is pretty much flat where other people's have dipped. So we're pretty much flat. You know, we're still a district that has high numbers of students on free and reduced. So we're still, making sure that we're doing all of the things that we can do to get kids to school, you know, and work to make sure that they're there every day, because there is no makeup work or homework to do. You have to do it with us. Yeah. We also, just so you know, we also purchased Magic School and are embracing AI. So we do make them do things in front of us, but we're also integrating and teaching around that as well. Yeah. You're welcome. I know we're over time.
This is fantastic.
One minute.
I just want to show you like the additional stuff that's in the deck for your reference later. So what we were going to have you do is take time going through some artifacts of some of their standard-based grading that is public-facing, that you can read, pick apart. And clearly we saw the why. They've defined it. Again, all the things you can find on the website, but this is kind of shortcut to, like, the good stuff. Defining it, what it is, how they marked things on their 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, why that transition. This was really good, defining the advantages, again, so making that really clear to the community, because, again, your community, teachers, students, business owners, have a concept of, we want kids to get an A, right? Mm-hmm. That's the thing. So if you try to change that game up to something that's not an A, we got a problem. Well, actually, this is probably a lot better in terms of supporting student learning. Literal like screenshots of some of their setups in their grade book and some of explanations of what some of those standards are.
Oh yeah, I love this. So yep. This is AP Math. So these, you can see that these are competencies and practices. So embedded within the rubrics are more details, and then each assignment has a content standard. So if I would look at the assignment to know, okay, so we're solving, we're solving systems of equations, but you got a score under communication, because I was looking in that area. How are you communicating your reasoning? So, and that if I want to see what the content is, I go to the assignment level.
So, in summation, Journey of 1,000 Miles begins with a single step. If you've been following, has anybody been following the Peace Walk? They made it. They made it yesterday, right? They went all the way from Texas, to Washington, D.C. Took them a long time. Took a very interesting route, but they got there. So you can get there. You can do it. I don't think there's any excuse, if we come back to MSTC 2030, that all of your high schools and all of your middle schools and all of your upper L, there's no good reason that they can't be on a more standards-based grading system that leads to more meaningful, accurate communication of student knowledge and strengths, and therefore opportunities to grow. So our challenge to you is to start where you are, but put that plan into place. We thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you to Colleen. Thanks. Doing the work. That's our email. pepper her with questions.
Oh, I have cards.
And she has cards, too.
I can send you our facts or whatever, so I'll put them back here on the table.
Thanks. Have a good conference, and we'll see you tomorrow. These are the real soldiers.
Yes, they
are. To me, it seems like
people are saying
at that, and like I went before on like some specific things about like you know time, and this even the middle school. Yeah. Much easier for me as a parent to support than if I see syllabus, quiz one, quiz
30
two,
points,
HW,
W,
gotta look
yeah.
One.
They can still look in assignments.
All I know is that kids
there's been a little bit of a learning curve in understanding how to manage through power school. You know, like the better I get. So right now we have quarter one, quarter two, semester one, quarter three, quarter four, but we only score semester one. So next year I'm getting rid of the quarters because what they're trying to do is they're trying to do 50-50 average to the semester, and that's not how it works. I could have two assignments that I'm scoring in quarter one and 18 that I'm scoring in quarter two, and you're like, wait, you got a four and a one. Why are they getting a one? And it's because I'm not averaging those two together. So there's things like that that I'm still working on. And I just made the decision. I really didn't ask anybody. I said, next year we're just not having quarters. It's silly. There's no reason for it. So, like, streamlining some things, getting the mud out of the way so that they can just clearly. Also, one of the things I learned is that not many of them don't go onto the computer. So what it looks like on a phone is really important. They can make the adjustment to 4-3-2-1. Like this, my kid is getting, you know, he's in the, but what they can't do is if they can't dig in, like if my kid is getting a 2 and I want to know why, it's not as easy on the phone to see the spread like you see. So there's things like that that are just kind of, you know, but this year has been night and day compared to last year. Last year, implementing a new system and then also working through a grade scale that was funky at the high school. Like people were blaming power school, blaming standards-based grading, and they were like coming at us in all directions, and it's like some of this is just getting used to a new student information system because we're learning. And then they're like, but our kids don't need to be guinea pigs, you know, there's all that kind of thing. So, you know, it's been we started in 21, so it's been some years. We've had some interruptions, obviously. Like it's been the last 2 years, I think. I wish we would have switched to power school. We did. I would have been okay with MyStar also if it could have. The problem was is that when we were in high school, you couldn't, like, the different standards came in list form. Like I couldn't chunk it together to say, this is your grade in communication. So we had to teach our parents at the high school how to count the communications, and they were mixed in with perseverance or whatever the heck the other things were. And then they had to like do some like side math.
You could like collapse, like essentially that's what you're doing.
Yeah, it was, right. And so this system, I just knew because my kids went to Lake Orion and I knew K-8, it was fairly easy. And so I'm like, I came from Macomb. I mean, I live in Macomb, but that's where I worked. And so I was used to that. Like, it'll do it. Not that MyStar can't, but I just don't know how. And there's not somebody for me to really call. There kind of is our person at our district, but when we had asked for more support, it was just really hard.
Yeah, we're all set.
Okay,
yeah,
thank you.
So,
yeah, we were able to figure out how to fix the 100% scale thing in my town.
Yeah.
So there's a fix for that.
Okay.
So this is great. So essentially, it's like a switch.
Okay.
Essentially, it converts it to like a specifically a 0 to 5.
Yeah.
Or 5 is the max.
Sure.
And it fixes the 0 issue.
Yeah.
So
okay,
we're able
that's
to
good.
Make that switch at middle school in addition to.
Yeah.
some of the equitable grading practices.
Right.
So, you know, like, okay, like we couldn't, it was a team, so yeah. we couldn't eliminate practice.
Yeah.
So practice is maxed at like 5% of the grade.
Right.
But like, you know, so, and some of the things, like these things can't be
right.
anymore. So the non-academic. So
right.
It was just out of the academic.
Like, grade. Here's your Kleenex box, 5 yeah. points.
Right. And then,
yeah.
And then I just made it that, you know, we're came around our high school curriculum coordinator and just looking for something and
yeah.
we're looking at some grade books.
Grades
you know,
were like really problematic.
School, like,
they
like,
stood
how,
in the
how,
way
how
of collaboration.
How
yeah.
do I know kids are getting it if this kid has an A because they did extra credit
yep.
and turned in the syllabus, which is the syllabus.
There's
still there's a syllabus mark on.
Mark
on.
On
like,
yeah. It's in
yeah.
there.
Yeah. yeah.
And how do I know if kids are getting bio, understanding the biology concept?
Yeah.
If you know, points to the grade is being bumped
yeah.
up by extra credit, and
yeah.
because they turned stuff in or
yeah.
reverse, like they didn't do some of those things,
yeah.
and oh, does that mean they don't know the biology?
Yeah.
And now they can't move on to AP,
right?
You know, and then it's creating barriers
yeah.
for kids. Like, oh,
where we run into some of our biggest problems is when a kid's been absent for a while, and we don't have evidence of learning, and then the parents ask for makeup work, and we don't have anything to give them, and we're like. That's where we started implementing this like 2 week period of like you have to give something that encompasses all the standards you taught and gives them an opportunity to show you where yeah. It's not that. No. No. And it's only at the high school where we do it. Because we don't like it does not matter at the other grades. Like there's really no accountability at the other grades. It's a communication device only. It's not going anywhere else. So we also don't start GPAs until they walk through the door as ninth graders, even though I have middle schoolers attending high school classes. They get credit for those, but they can choose, there's a form they can fill out, they can choose a letter grade to go on their transcript if they want, but because we give them at the high school level, that's just part of our policy that was written. So we created a form where parents can either choose like a G, which is passing, an H, which is no credit, or they can choose the letter grade that the high school would have given them. But their GPAs don't start until they're actually ninth graders walking through high school.
I love the idea of the college panel too.
Oh, it was,
fears
yes,
like,
it was just so affirming and made me so happy. I didn't record it because I wanted people to speak freely. We had some audience people and you know, like, during COVID, how people like just reveal things about their children. So I didn't record it because they'll ask a question. They'll be like, "My son was just hospitalized for blah 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 blah. What do you do about that?" Like, and I'm like, "You just said that thing about your kid to 75 people." Like, poor child.
Man, look, this is crazy. Kind of a little bit along that same line. Julie was doing this thing. About like things parents could do to support their kids, like mental health at home. And it was at night, so I had it on my phone. I was cooking dinner, and then one of the parents is like, "Yeah, you know, my kid's been down in the dumps, and they're trying to encourage him." So I wanted them to do DoorDash with me, and Julie was like, "Oh, like showing them like how you go to work and everything.
Yeah.
That's really good responsibility." She was like, "No, like." DoorDash, like ding dong DoorDash, like you run up to somebody's door, ring the doorbell, and run away. And I could see Julie's face was like, oh, and then I'm like, no, we cannot be mortified. It's like Oakland Schools is recommending. Parents like ding dong bitch. Because some little black boy got shot at. In Rochester.
Oh, that was awful.
I remember that.
Absolutely,
we're
I know.
Not playing ding dong.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. In MyStar. For MyStar.
Yeah.
So there are plenty of things that you can work
like,
through. And I know
like
I know
Simpson
you guys. Yeah. I think honestly we probably could have kept on MyStar. We were on MyStar for 2 years at the high school while we were doing this. It was just a lot more teaching parents how to read it. And I'm still working on Streamline and PowerSchool because we're still learning how to set it up. Oh, it's crazy. One little box you check and everything changes.
Or
it's,
I went out to California for their week training.
Yeah.
My head's on fire.
Yeah,
you know how good I know tech and
it is a lot. then you do something once or twice a year, and then you have to remember how you found it. Like, it's just so much better when just there's a team. So Macomb County, the whole county was on it. So that was so helpful because they set things up. So if I wanted to do standards-based grading in Macomb County, I could either do my own thing, or I could follow their advice on this is how you do it.
Sure.
So they, like, you can go on their website, you can see, like, here's all the things that we've built, so a district, if they wanted to do it, could do it. That is, Macomb is, or Oakland is just much more individualistic, and that's just the reality. And that's fine, because what Macomb did for standards-based grading is not what we do. Ours is more competency-based by the time you get to high school. It starts out with content standards, and then moves through competencies. We have a little bit of that on the elementary report card, the science. Four standards for science are all science practices and basically competencies in science. And so so those kind of push through all the way up to 12.
The recovery is good for that, man.
The math.
But we use Skyward, and it's got a predictive formula in there. So teachers are still trying to put in formative things, and then it is.
Can they exempt them?
Well, they can override the grade.
Yeah.
So it, you know, it might be 1, 1, 1, 1, and then they get a couple twos, and then it's predicting them. It gives them a 3 on their report card. If my husband teaches fourth grade,
okay.
It's like, they don't, they shouldn't be a 3. That's not where they are.
Our elementary folks, like the parents and the kids, they, and even the teacher, they don't really put any recordings into, like, our GATE, which is our gifted school, they sort of do, but the elementary, they don't have to put anything into PowerSchool. They can record their data wherever they want. The only time they're really hands-on in PowerSchool is when they're doing those report cards. Some teachers will use it, but it is not parent-facing or kid-facing. They don't get to look in on their kids, like, and check their grades all the time. We've never allowed them to do that, so, which is a saving grace, because we just want the kids to learn. And so, so they're looking at second graders, like, averages? Like,
they're
overall scores?
They're looking, like, this is the assignment, or this is the project, or this is the task. This is the school.
In like second grade?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, geez.
Oh, yeah. So when they mark the report cards, do they have a rubric for?
So we built a district one around the science. So science has a district one. And we've constantly been calibrating, but we also, with our with math, we're kind of going through a thing with math right now. So, but with ELA and with math, we have other assessments that we use. Like, we use for reading, the fluency, we use Acadience, which is levels. We also have BrainSpring assessments, or Gillingham assessments. We have NWEA. They look at those data points, and that's where the score comes from. They have observations in the classroom, and then other data points where they're calibrated against, like, proficiency and normative data. So they're not
only reads at grade level.
They're utilized,
at their progress monitoring data.
Yes. And we send those reports home. So at quarter one, we send NWEA family reports home. At semester, we send Acadience data home. So they get that along with their report card. So it should align. Like, if you're seeing this level at Acadience, and you see these, and it's part of the, you know, whatever the grade level is, whatever, you know, the fluency scores should match the fluency scores underneath the reading. So we're working on math. We do have IXL for 3rd through 5th grade, and NWA for all the grades. So those are two data points, other than the common assessments and things that we do in the classroom. But we're searching for a new math resource, and we'll be searching all next year. We're going to take our time with it. But, yeah, I just, that's rough. Like, having parents checking in.
They do.
Like, I try to remind them, I'm like, parents, you used to come home with an envelope at the end of the school year and like, hand it to your parent, and then they opened it, and then they signed it, and then that went back, or like the middle of the, whatever. I'm like, you never know what your grades were. Like, it was about, just learn. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, the first time a teacher comes and says, you know, like, we're not getting X, Y, and Z from Johnny or Susie, then it starts.
Yeah.
And it just carries over.
Yeah.
Well, even on the website, they're supposed to be linked.
Yeah.
The teacher is supposed to be linked there.
Yeah.
So that
There are some teachers that try to implement that. And I, like, this is where we still are doing some work. There are some teachers that are trying to still do the crosswalk from traditional to these four-point scales. And that's where building leadership is really important, because I can't be in eight places at once.
Sure.
And I don't want to be. I don't, like, so we've been doing a lot of work around engagement and doing a lot of, like, learning walks and stuff with our staff and with our leadership, just to, as, like, what does the classroom practice look like? And then also our instructional coaches work on these data meetings to make sure that they're adjusting practice for what they're seeing in the data. But it is, it has shifted the grade chasing.
And I will give you credit when we think about, like, efficiency and standardization of practice. You've got a lot of content on your website that's very, like, understandable.
See, it's bite-sized.
So, you know, kind of if you think of it like a customer service center where your customer, a parent, is going to call or email with a complaint, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, bam. Like, this is the 30th time we've heard this question.
Yeah.
Here's a resource that can help explain, oh, this is da-da-da.
Yeah.
Video explanations, text. And so the more we can, you know, stop treating like these, like parent by parent, like whack-a-moles. We're like,
yeah.
Okay, we know our parents, and this is why I advocate for those of you who are making changes, like, get parents on some of your improvement committees, whatever that looks like, PTAs, special ad hocs, be the sounding board, like, oh, we're really going to be looking at, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da, okay, here's a resource that can explain.
I had to do board workshops and all kinds of, because they're all parents in the community, pretty much. You know, and we did a lot of this work, though, like, through the COVID stuff going on. So because we had more time with our teachers, so carving out the time to do the visioning work was a little easier for us because we had asynchronous Wednesdays and we were able to do that during that year. We were remote for a long time. So, but yeah, I mean, it's worth the time spent because
we
keep having
to go back.
Well, if you look at that, if you look at that model for change, it'll tell you exactly what happens. Like,
and
if
that's
you
what
do.
I said, like, this whole standards-based, you know, report card in our county is, it's just a hot mess.
Yeah.
Because they're not aligned, or you get on school, like you said, who's trying to do every little thing in their report card is like 3 pages long, and it takes, you know, the teacher's complaint.
And for what? And for what? Like,
you know,
and what do you do with all of that data? Like, what changes do you make? What do the parents do with that? You know, I mean, really, it's that there's much more timely things that you can do, like what we do with the Acadians. It's like every 2 weeks we're looking at how kids are doing, and we're monitoring that. That's like a semester grade at the mid and at the end of the year. It just, like, it's really, it's more compliance, right? Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
We may be reaching out.
Yeah, we'll
anytime.
Have more questions.
Yeah, anytime.
I'm wondering, do you guys do a kindergarten screener? What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, we
really
do things like, so we have TK and kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
And what we try to avoid is putting kids in TK because of academics. So when we screen, we're looking for, can the kid, like, leave their mom's lap? Do they need a nap? Do they need, and so if we screen in any academic ways, it is just for knowledge so that you know your kids that are coming in, but not for placement. So that, it's been a fight. It has been a fight because teachers want the kids that struggle in TK. I made a change that automatically, if you're on a waiver, you're going to TK, and then you can appeal based on your kid's social emotional development to go up to kindergarten. And there are kindergartners that maybe have, like, a May or June, July birthday that might need to go to TK because they still need naps.
Right.
And so ours is a little bit more whole child. South Lyon has a really good way of doing it.
South Lyon.
They bring the parents in and their stations, and they do things like, it's not so much the academic, it's almost like an orientation.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I didn't even think about this because I was middle school, secondary person.
Like, they make sure that the parents take their kids into the bathroom and flush the toilet because the noise scares them.
Oh,
never
yeah.
even thought of that.
These toilets here, I want these at our element.
They're
they
so quiet.
So, no, they're loud.
Oh, they're loud.
Yeah. And the kids won't be messing around in there. You will know.
You'll know.
Oh, look at you. See, I don't even know what those things are.
The
fourth
and fifth grade hallway? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, it's what was really kind of irking me and one of my MTSS coordinators, Sarah, was that it's like you're screening these kids for what, like things that you're going to teach them,
right?
Like you're teaching them this. So, but really, what we look for is like, can they hold scissors? Can they hold like fine motor control? No matter what your screener is, like it really, what do you do with it? What do you, you know, really our biggest thing was making sure that it's the right fit, right program for kids. I had a TK classroom at one of our schools where kids were readers. They were so high in academics, but they could not, like, literally they were babies. They were such babies. They couldn't make it through the day, like, kept wetting their pants, but they could do the academics.
Right.
So, you know, it was
the
like.
The academic piece isn't really part of us either.
I would South Lyon, so
they've got
their stuff together. We're actually looking at some of like what they did with their parents and implementing it at our place this time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for your time.
It was nice to meet you. Thank you so much.
All right.
You're a rock star.
Oh, thank you. This was smooth.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I knew it had to be.
Yeah, it was shorter.
Yes. Two of the ladies that we presented to yesterday stopped me. That's I was talking to them, so that was really good. I'm just so encouraged by people wanting to do this.
Yeah.
It's so hard though.
It's I have, and so for Megan to do it, a lot of the great, and I've wondered.
And we're still messy.
Yeah.
It's always messy because you're trying to capture learning. Mm-hmm. But it's getting better. Everything's getting better. And people are just getting used to it too.
Yeah, I wanna figure out how to do a push for it because it's big. So this is not like here's a single day workshop you're gonna come to it or schools and learn all the things.
Right.
Like the conference.
Yeah.
And so I wonder about what's the right support pathway, you know, multi year to take a space.
If your building leaders are not on board, you're gonna be screwed.
Yeah.
Your high school principal has to be willing to do it.
Yeah.
And I give Doug a lot of credit for that. Like, he makes me mad often, but getting better at it, things. But, you know, because he was so, can I help you with anything?
No, I think I'm just going to throw this stuff in my room.
But if he hadn't